everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesarino back here for our Survivor 40 Roundtable number 2 as we are getting ready to preview another 4 of the Survivor 40 contestants as they get ready to participate in Survivor Winners at War coming up on February 12th. And we are going to be talking about today Ethan Zahn, Danny Boatwright, Yul Kwan, and Sophie Clark here today with our esteemed panel. Let's bring them in. All right, first here with us, a man who was in Fiji for the start of Survivor 39 and a all-around Survivor historian. Please welcome from Parade.com, Mr. Mike Bloom.
Happy to be here, Rob. As the resident Jew of the panel tonight, I have abstained from ham for this podcast, so please don't even put it in front of me. I will refuse it.
Okay. All right. You got it, Mike. Of course, Mike's co-host on the RHAP B&B is here with us. We are very lucky to have with us the great Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
Very excited to be here as the resident hick of the panel. I have a feather in my butt, and I'm just looking forward to tonight. Oh, wait, wrong person. Never mind. I'm getting over being sick, but nothing could keep me from talking about season 40.
Okay. Yeah, Leon, there are a lot of airborne diseases coming from feathers, so maybe your choice of wardrobe was not the best idea.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Who needs a doctor when you have Mike Bloom?
Okay, but Leon, you are feeling better?
Yes, I'm feeling better, and I'm so excited to talk about all of these winners.
All right, and then finally, a man who never gets sick because it's not in his programming, taking a breather from talking about the circle, here is Taryn Armstrong. Taryn, how are you?
Are we not talking about the circle? That's
right.
My life.
Not right this second.
I mean, we are a circle right now, right? A circle of trust.
Rectangle, yeah.
Yeah.
Talking about our trust in Survivor players.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, the logo is like ovalish.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought we were talking about a bunch of people going in to play a game where they were catfishing as Survivor winners.
No, they're spearfishing.
Is that the Survivor term?
Man.
If you're trying to pretend you're somebody else in the game, you're spearfishing them.
Spearfishing, and there's a girl named Kat, and we don't really talk too much about her experience too much. But anyway, so we are going to be talking about the winners at war. 4 new people last night had the chance to talk about the idols: Sandra, Rob, and Amber. They were back in season 39. Rob and Amber are back as a married couple. We talked about them. Had a great show last night with Brian Scally, Frail Mary, Jessica Leese. That's up in our podcast feed. Of course, we will have 2 more of these next week as well. And we will have 5 in total previewing the winners at war. Also, a second podcast of the day I get to do with Taryn Armstrong that we already talked about the episode, one of the episodes of The New Batch of The Circle. We are on our way. Taryn, are you through? Have you talked about all the first 7 episodes so far?
Yes, I got 3 podcasts recorded today. We're going to do another one tomorrow. This is just a day of wake up, watch podcast, yeah. watch podcast, and now another podcast.
Okay,
well, Taryn, you're essentially like Rob and Sandra right now, right? You sort of like spent your 39 days covering the circle, and now you're sort of dipping out to. Though I guess maybe this is the opposite, where you're not going to be covering Survivor in as large of a capacity. So this is more so you sitting in the booth, just making commentary that everyone else can hear as well.
Yeah, I just spent a whole podcast bonding with Rob prior to this one, so we do kind of have a pre-existing relationship. So
now, did you build your own podcast setup? Taryn.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the panels look like else. Production obviously came in and provided those.
No, this is all me. Guys, I'm an expert.
Well, you can hear all things Circle in our Circle podcast feed at robiswebsite.com/circlepodcast to get all that. We'll be live tomorrow night with our week 2 Circle roundtable coming up Thursday night at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific live. Okay. All right. But let's get into Ethan, Danny, Yul, and Sophie. It's a night of, we have some first time winners in Danny and Yul and Sophie. Sophie and Ethan, who has tied with Amber for the longest layoff since they played. Let's go in chronological order, and let's start with Ethan. Mike, you referenced Ethan in the open. What does it mean as a Survivor historian to have Ethan Zahn returning to Survivor?
This is wild. This is absurd. You know, I think you themed this last night with this particular group of four as the winners that I think if you rank them in terms of the likelihood of appearing, I think some winners might be at the bottom of that list along with these four. But I think that, you know, due to certain circumstances, you would expect these people might not necessarily get the call back. Ethan's reason is probably a bit different than the other ones, but I am just so excited to see him here. He's someone who perennially excites me as a Survivor historian, be it when he walked into your live show, your live know-it-alls a few seasons ago, mm-hmm. when he did a podcast with you after season 35, or seeing him back playing Survivor after not one, but two cancer scares. I mean, it's amazing that he's alive, let alone back out on the island. And we'll certainly get into, you know, how he might be able to translate his game from 2001 to 2003 over to now, whether or not that transition is going to exist. But just from a pure appearance perspective, he is one of those people that I'm truly just staring at in disbelief that I get to see Ethan Zahn on my screen to start off 2020.
Yeah, I personally was blown away when I saw the list that he was back out there. I mean, I've known Ethan from the Survivor Amazon finale, from you know, first meeting him that night, and then getting to know him better over the years. He was at my wedding. He is somebody who I really thought that we were in danger of, like, I don't know if people really knew, you know, how things sounded like they were getting very dire at one point in terms of the his battle with Hodgkin's lymphoma. He's somebody who has you know, raised you know, thousands and thousands, if not into the hundreds of thousands of dollars for charity over the years. But I never imagined that we would have the day where he returns to Survivor after this very long layoff. He is somebody that in my conversations with him was very much somebody who was like the back in my day, and the game is so easy now that we had it hard. These newcomers, they get all this, they get all this food. It's not even hard anymore. And Leon, I'm very curious to see how Ethan is going to adapt to this really wild format of Survivor that exists here at Survivor 40.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking about all of the changes that have gone on since looking back at, I mean, I always think of Africa when I think of Ethan. Obviously, it's a season that he won, but even with All Stars, you know, it's such a different dynamic. And you have so many other things in just in terms of the game mechanic, as well as the way that the players approach the game, that are so different coming into this new season. And so seeing him sort of have to deal with immunity idols and extra votes and vote cancelers and idol nullifiers and all of the craziness that we could potentially see. I mean, I have no idea how that's going to go. I mean, he's a smart guy, but it's a very different style of gameplay.
Taryn, do you have any special reverence for Ethan?
I do. I mean, Ethan was my winner. I watched the first couple seasons, but as a young boy, watching Ethan on my screen, I was like, I love this guy. He played soccer like me. He had curly hair like me. It was the first time watching Survivor that I really, really just felt invested in a player. And he was so nice and like kind, and I loved him. And so I was over the moon when he won, and really basically for the first 10 or so seasons, like the first batch of Survivor seasons that I watched as a kid, he was always my favorite winner. I was heartbroken at the way that he went. I was heartbroken a lot during Survivor All-Stars, to be fair. But yeah, I loved Ethan. He was my guy.
Okay. Well, yeah, to sort of bring up the historians aspect of it all, I mean, what Taryn says is a representation of, I think, what so many people in the fan base felt at the time. No offense to Richard Hatch or Tina Wesson, both lovely people, but I would posit to say that Ethan was the first likable winner at least from an external perspective, where, you know, he just seemed like a really positive, nice guy, which reflected on the other castaways as well. So he handily got the win there. Let me ask a question here. This is something that Colin Stone asked, I believe, a few years ago during Survivor Game Changers. But do Ethan and Sari, out of like nearly 600 survivors, do those two have the best universal approval ratings in the Survivor fan base?
Taryn, put up a poll. We gotta find out.
I would imagine so. I think it's got to be up there. I mean, does anybody have anything bad to say about Ethan?
Exactly. Yeah.
I would say that Kim is probably up there also. I'm just trying to think.
Kim Stradlin.
Yes, not Kim Johnson.
And
I'm trying to think. I bet there's probably a couple others that are, you know, that are right up there. But I think that's sort of like, you know, you're 10s out of 10.
Well, and I think it's joint. Like, there are other people that join the ranks of them, right? Not to say anything that brings them down. It's just there are others that also, I think, match that level, because that's the thing. I can't think of anything bad really to say about Ethan. I mean, I have some nervousness going into this season for him. But in terms of him, I mean, him as a person, he always stands out to me as the sort of like first quintessential social player, because he was just so well liked and so loved. And that comes across to both the players that he played with and us at home, the viewers.
Yeah, I mean, T-Bird vocalized that exactly in the final seven episode of Africa. She like turns to, I think it's Kim Johnson, and she's like, who's gonna not vote for Ethan? Like, nobody. And I think, and she predicted it, she even voted for Ethan to win. And yeah, you're right, Leon. I mean, I think that likability, or at least respect, plays into every jury vote that happens. But Ethan was one of the first people to, you know, really benefit from the fact that he was this nice, genteel guy, just, you know, genuinely bonding with these people in extremely dire situations. And I think that was something that really brought that element to the forefront. And there's certainly strategy that I want to get into when talking with him, because I think he's actually a surprisingly more perceptive player than we make him out to be. But I think if you're looking at his game just at the outset, he is definitely somebody who is able to benefit on his personal affability more so than people like Richard or maybe even Tina.
Okay, well, let's talk about Ethan's two previous games. And it's interesting because he has two very different games. He has his first game where he ends up being part of this bigger alliance, and he refers to himself as the assistant coach. He says everybody likes the assistant coach in talking about the game, where the coach, not Coach Wade, can be more of the hard ass and disciplinarian, whereas the assistant coach is the person that you can come to. And then he has the second game in Survivor All-Stars, where really his back is to the wall really from the jump in that game, and he has to really, you know, play a much faster game from the start in that game. But it's interesting that he has, you know, two very distinct experiences with the show. But let's talk about the high points of his game in Survivor Africa. Liana, do you have any thoughts on the Ethan 1.0?
Well, if you're going to talk about high points, he won. Mm-hmm. So that's probably a pretty good high point for him there. Yes. The GOAT reward, also pretty good high point. No, I mean, I think when we talk about sort of quintessential Ethan, you do talk about that person who is just so personable and so friendly. And I don't think that that's something that went away in All-Stars, obviously, but just, you know, he was a former winner, so there was a target on his back. But if you're talking about, you know, his game in Africa, you just see him make all of these connections. And he even, I think Mike kind of alluded to this, had the understanding of, oh, I don't want to be that top dog. I want to be that assistant coach. And I want to try to quote a recent winner, lower my threat level and not put myself up front. So, I mean, he has this idea of social positioning, and we see that even in the first game in Africa.
Yeah. And Mike, I really think that the idea of just being part of a group as a decision maker, but maybe not being seen as like the key guy, could be something that Ethan could adapt to this particular season that we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I think that if you're talking about like the beta males, considering the egos that are certainly going to be coming into an all winter season, specifically, I would say the male cast in particular, Ethan is coming from a team background. He is more than willing to fall in to be that midi instead of the forward, as it were. This is an interesting group as well, because I feel like, and Ethan is a great representation of this, I feel like all four people that we're going to be talking about tonight are excellent politicians in a way that they are able to, you know, field questions. They're very inoffensive. Generally, they're very careful with their words. They have, you know, a good amount of likability to them. And specifically from Africa's Game, that is something that Ethan owns really well. In fact, I would really encourage people, especially those that are watching on YouTube right now, if you check out the YouTube channel Once Upon an Island, they have a 35-minute video recap of Ethan's game. So you don't even need to watch Survivor Africa again if you want to remind yourself of what Ethan did. But I mean, he is sort of a politician here, right? You know, he's someone who is sort of shaking hands and kissing babies. He's making personal bonds with people. The interesting thing about Ethan's first game is one, his level of perception. As Liana said, it's not only this idea of, okay, I'm going to let Lex sort of put his neck out and I'll be the one to sort of stand back. And, you know, when he inevitably gets chopped, I'll be the one to reap the rewards. But there are moments like he joins up with Lex, but he is very wary of Lex. Understandably so, because Lex is wheeling and dealing all over the place to the point where when we get to the final eight, he looks at Brandon, who just voted with his alliance, and he says, okay, Brandon's loyal to the alliance. He voted with us, but he's only really loyal to Lex, and that's not good for me. And so he was the one who partially really organized that vote against Brandon. And so he does sort of have those seeds of gameplay still in him that I think, despite all these sort of baubles and dangles that are coming with the game of Modern Survivor, he's still able to sort of harken back to some of those more remedial aspects of it. And the other thing is that Ethan in his first game was actually surprisingly had a lack of emotion associated. He even had a confessional where he's like, you know, I have so much paranoia going on right now. I know Lix was the king of paranoia, but he was sort of the prince. And as a result, he bonded with people, but he definitely didn't let them know as much of him as they could have. And I wonder if now that he sort of let his emotions go, especially in something like Survivor All-Stars, and especially given what happened in his life, I can only imagine the bonds he's going to be able to make further with these people, considering that the Ethan who, for all intents and purposes, sort of shut himself off in a larger sense of things, was still able to be one of the most likable people of the season.
Taryn, I want to ask you about his end game in Survivor Africa and whether or not you remember. Do you know what his preferred partner for the final two was, that he's going down towards the end with Lex and with Big Tom? And then ultimately he ends up getting there with Kim Johnson, who emerges as probably the easiest to beat of that group. But do you know if he had a personal preference that he ends up winning Kim Johnson ends up winning the final challenge, right? And then she ends up knocking out Lex, and Ethan doesn't end up having to get any blood on his hands to dismantle this trinity that he's a part of.
Right. I don't remember exactly who he wanted to take at that time. But my memory was that he didn't want to take Lex. Maybe that was just my memory of him being like not completely sure that he trusted Lex. But I'm not entirely sure. I think Mike might have a better idea.
Yeah, Mike or Liana, do you have any memory of that?
So I can't remember if he did any sort of like postseason in the annals of Survivor history about it on the show.
If that
he
existed.
Said he wanted to move from the assistant coach to the actual coach role, and that he said, I want to quote unquote go to the end with the best. Mm-hmm. And I think from what I remember, I think he was fine going with Lex. I think the big thing that sort of has turned around in Survivor fandom is whether or not it would have been like a shutout Lex victory, or if, you know, Ethan's affability would have won out at the end of the day. But I do believe he actually wanted to go to the end with, you know, the big three, as it were, the Africa big three, and Kim Johnson sort of ruined those prospects with her immunity wins.
Mm-hmm. But helped his prospects to ultimately win the game. Yeah. We'd have to do a real deep dive into that to figure out, you know, exactly, you know, who wanted who in the end. And, you know, those three guys, Ethan, Lex, and Big Tom, are such good friends after the game. I don't know if you ever get any of them, like, you know, full disclosure of what they were really thinking. I know that does come up a little bit in Survivor All-Stars when it's Lex who is ultimately voting out Ethan. Is there anything else we want to say about Survivor Africa before we turn to Survivor All-Stars a little bit? Okay. In Survivor All-Stars, Ethan comes back and then is told, really from the start, he's part of that Saboga tribe with Tina and Jenna Lewis and Jerry and Rupert and Rudy. And he's told really from the start that Jenna Lewis says, hey, winners, they had their time. Now it's your turn to, you know, feel the pain. You're going to be going out. And Ethan is, Mike, aghast at this from the start.
I love All-Stars Ethan. All-Stars Ethan is sassy Ethan. And again, compare this to the guy who was just like a really nice 20-something kid who only wanted to do is play hacky sack with the kids in the African village while slaughtering goats. And here, he knows he's screwed from the jump. Mm-hmm. And we see a different side of Ethan. But I think I also want to give him credit here, where Ethan is the very last winner to get voted off. And he finishes at 11th place out of 18. Mm-hmm. You know, he gets brought over during that like Saboga dissolution, specifically because Mogo Mogo wants to get rid of him. But considering he survived past the boots of, you know, Richard and Colby, I feel like that does say something a bit, where even though he was dealt the worst hand, he was trying to play his best game at the poker table.
That's interesting, you know, talking about playing the best hand, because I think even though he always has this very like feeling of almost incredulousness when he's in All-Stars, just like, I can't believe that this is happening to me right now, he's definitely willing to wheel and deal. And so I think that's why, Mike, like you pointed out, he was the last of the winners to survive, because he was willing to, you know, at least do his best he could to make the deals that he needed to, even though, you know, obviously it didn't get him that far.
Yeah. Taryn, do you feel like that Ethan will take anything from this experience in Survivor All-Stars into this Winners at War season?
It has to be an invaluable experience, especially on a season full of winners, a lot of which have only played once, where everything mostly went right for them because they won. In his first season, a lot of things went right for him, and we never saw this side of him playing from the bottom, having to fight for every inch. And I was surprised when I looked back at Survivor All-Stars to see how far he made it. I remembered him leaving much earlier than like the eighth person voted out, or maybe it was seventh person voted out. But that's a long time to be playing from the bottom, to having to fight for, you know, every minute that you're staying in the game. And that's valuable experience, knowing what things to say, what it feels like when people are not with you, how to break through that. I just remember him being like so good at like the incredulousness, yes, but being able to be like just a little bit longer, man, just like just not yet, and it kind of worked. You know, it's I was impressed, and I think this is going to be really good for him, because not a lot of winners have this kind of experience for so long of a period.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that Ethan, I think there's only like four cast members this season who the last time they were on Survivor was not their winning season. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I feel like that says something. And it's also the fact of how he went out, which, remember, he had this big bond with Lex from Africa, and Lex sits him down and says like, hey, buddy, I'm going to have to cut you
business
here.
Trip.
Yeah, I can only imagine, not to be confused with Road Trip, to quote another winner that's left off the list, I can only imagine sort of like sitting there and not necessarily having it stew in your head, because obviously Ethan had more important things of concern, but to think about that sort of the way that he went out last time, and knowing how many pre-existing relationships are coming into this season, not necessarily from Ethan's perspective, but from a bunch of other perspectives, I wonder how that changes his own view of what those relationships are going to be like, and how things might easily be broken when it comes to Survivor.
Okay. Hmm. Well, the other interesting thing, though, is that it's one thing to be on the outs. It's another thing to be told you're on the outs and to play that way versus if it's unclear. So, like, I think that that's sort of going to be interesting, because I think with this season in particular that we're going into, I think there's going to be a lot of undercutting. I think there's going to be a lot of switching back and forth. And I don't think that the lines are going to be as cleanly drawn as they were in the seasons that Ethan played in. And so I think playing with that ambiguity is going to be a new thing. But I completely agree that having the experience of having been on the outs is better than, you know, the other winners that we're going to talk about tonight have experienced. So while I agree it's very valuable, I think there is still that difference, though, between the ambiguity and sort of the clear cutness that he was able to deal with in his two seasons.
Yeah, I think that second time out, I think, is going to be a powerful experience for Ethan, because it's something that Tyson has talked about with me on podcasts, about how when Tyson ended up winning on his third time after losing the game twice, whereas there are some of these people that we're going to be talking about in this season that everything always went their way. They played once and it worked out, and they don't know exactly what it's like to know all right, I am getting voted out now, and this is what this feels like, and this is how I avoid it, and this is how you play from the bottom. And so Ethan has these two experiences, one where everything broke his way, one where nothing went his way, and he had to make the best out of a very bad situation, and now he is able to come back. And it's an interesting spot for him to come back to when we start to look at the playing board of who does Ethan know, who's he going to work with, because you could, Mike, I think it's fair to say, Ethan might have some of the least amount of connections out of anybody that we're going to talk about.
Yeah, which is like, again, he hasn't been exactly disconnected from things as much as people like we're going to get to, like Yule and Danny, who have sort of purposely kept things at arm's length. I think his life circumstances have probably put him on the outs, as it were. But yeah, his most ingrained connections in terms of on-screen time are the girl he previously dated and her husband, the guy who mocked him mercilessly on Survivor All-Stars. Yeah. And beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah, but I actually think that that is going to be a those are friendly faces in a storm for Ethan and for Rob and Amber. Likewise, I feel like that those are probably coming in. Liana, I think that Ethan's maybe best friends might be Rob and Amber.
I think it'll have to be. I mean, just the experiences that he's gone through. He doesn't have time to go to Hearts of Reality. So when you see a friendly face, even if it's somebody who voted you out, I think you are still going to be drawn to that person because, like, oh, thank God, somebody I know here. You know, I'm sure you walk into a party and you're like, well, at least I know that person. Like, I don't care about Karen from accounting, but I'm going to hang out with her because I don't know anybody else. So I can see that definitely being the circumstance here, because I'm trying to think of who else from this list could potentially be a close connection and a pre-existing relationship. And apparently Mike is raising his hand.
Yes, Mike,
because
Bloom.
He has a comment.
Yes.
I think I don't know if they're on the same tribe, but if they are, call it right now. Ethan's number one ally is Adam Klein.
Adam Klein. Okay. All right. Interesting. So, of course, that's a very good point. I'm sure that Adam Klein is going to have reverence for, for Ethan, certainly. Adam Klein, of course, lost his mom to cancer. Ethan has had a long battle with cancer, I believe. Ethan also lost his dad at a young age. So it's a very good point, Mike.
I think that, Ethan is going to be coming in from the perspective, this, again, old school mentality, even though Tommy sort of proved that it's not exactly completely old school, of just making personal connections. And I will see whether that portends well to his chances. But if he's looking for people to just sort of connect with on a personal level, like you said, Rob, there is so much shared DNA between Ethan's experience and Adam's experiences, on top of the fact that Adam has so much reverence for old school Survivor. I forget if he, I feel like he might have mentioned Ethan at some point during, the super duper fan aspects of Millennials versus Gen X offline. But I can imagine that if those two are in it together, I think they are very closely connected, because I think Adam is someone who would genuinely want to work with Ethan, and Ethan's someone who would find a lot of personal resonance in Adam and subsequently want to work with him then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Taryn, I feel like that this cast is going to have an incredible amount of reverence for Ethan. I can't see anybody coming out of the gate wanting to target him.
I agree. He doesn't have a big target on his back like some of the really big personalities. I think that the connection to Rob and Amber may be like his only like tangible connections, but I think they're very valuable ones, because Rob, I imagine, is in one of the centers of a big web. Like if there are webs of connections, Rob knows a lot of people, both from his seasons and outside of seasons. And so having that connection plus the reverence of, people who are on the cast who are winners that are fans of the show, like Adam, or just people that can respect just a relatively soft-spoken, seemingly down-to-earth kind of guy. We talk a lot about, or we have talked a lot about, how on All-Star seasons, the typical winner for a while was what a lot of people called the under-the-radar female, Amber, and then Sandra, and it seemed like that was like the real threat for a while, and I feel like that's something that people are looking out for now. But I think that Ethan is in a lot of ways the under-the-radar male, in the sense that he's not the most threatening person from his season. He's not Lex. Lex got most of the strategic credit, but he is a very social, social player. He's somebody that is strategic enough to play what the cards that are dealt to him. I think that he could be in a really good spot connection wise, almost because he doesn't have a lot of other connections. He's not going to be seen as threatening. And I think that a lot of people are going to look at him like, maybe this is my in for a big group, or maybe this is somebody I can pick up. But I think he's in a really great spot. It's hard to see him being an early boot because there are just way too many other early boot candidates. And if he gets a decent foothold, that could be it.
Yeah. Liana, I also could see Ethan playing up well that, hey, I don't even know what an idol is. I don't even know how the game works. When I played, that there was no, that there, I don't even understand the game. I think that whether or not it's true, I think he could really, you know, help pull, sort of like the Colby heroes versus villains thing. I don't know who anybody is.
Yeah, old man Ethan.
I don't know where I am.
I don't know where I am.
Here, take this clue.
Stop eating bananas. Yeah, I don't know.
Trying to watch Treasure Island.
I think that for Ethan, if he plays up that card, I don't know. Even if he doesn't play up that card, though, necessarily, I think just because of him being associated with older seasons, I think that stigma will be there for him of like, oh, well, he's never played with idols, so like maybe he doesn't really like get it, you know. And so I think that could be something that benefits him. I like Terrence's point about, oh, if he gets brought into a big group, that actually not having those connections is something that it could be beneficial because of that. Add on the fact of sort of this, oh, you know, I'm just a friendly guy, I don't really know what's going on kind of thing. I think that could make for a long run in the game. My big concern, though, is if he gets to, you know, final 7-8 and we start looking towards the end and you look at his story.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm going to start bawling because you cannot let him get to the end and win that money because who's not, it's the same thing. Like Mike said, you know, who's not going to vote for Ethan?
It's such a great point. Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
I mean, flat out, they're not letting a cancer survivor get to the end. Especially when you look at people like Jeremy and Adam, who did not win purely because of the revelations that they made, but they are two of the biggest reminders of how you can bring in elements from the outside world and incorporate it into your journey as a person and as a survivor player to your benefit. And there's no way they're going to let Ethan get to that, you know, that final, especially near the final 5 or final 6, where it feels like now that's when they're really starting to cut threats. We saw that with Elaine. But that's what makes me nervous, too. I know we say all these things about like, well, Ethan's, you know, he can be the beta male. He can get, you know, he has so much likability. Who's going to get rid of him early? But my mind keeps going back to that first tribal council from season 39, where you have people like Ronnie being like, Elaine's too likable. I know it's day 3, but I'm thinking about day 33 and we got to get rid of her here. And ultimately, they didn't end up doing that there. But who knows how cutthroat these winners are going to be, that if they're thinking that far down the road, I don't think it's a guarantee that Ethan makes it out of the early game, unfortunately.
Yeah. Taryn, at what point does that start to kick in? Do people start to say, well, we got to get rid of Ethan because has too good of a story?
I don't think it will be the cause of him going out early. I think that if it's talked about, it's only because it's being used as an excuse to target him because of some other reason. I think that there are too many other massive threats who need to be addressed much sooner than Ethan. Like, if you're on a tribe with and I don't know the tribe, so forgive me, but if you're on a tribe with like Rob Mariano and Tony and Sandra and Jeremy, you're not going to be like, well, Ethan's too likable. You're going to be like, oh my God, I need to make sure that these guys don't me first. And I think that like the likability factor is not going to be as much of an issue, especially at first. And then toward the end, you can still, like, depending on the you know, layout of the people around you, if you have let's say Yule, who's super likable, you've got somebody like Kim Spradlin, you've got Natalie, you know, like people that are like big threats to win in a jury, and you have to choose between them and Ethan. Like, there's other choices, right? It's not like if Ethan is playing in a regular season, I see this, like he's got way too great of a story, but all of these people have won a jury vote before. Mm-hmm. They're all threatening a jury vote to some degree. And I do think there are lesser threats when it comes down to a final three scenario or a final two scenario than Ethan, but there also might be greater threats when it comes to people still standing in the way of me getting there, or people that have played a more impressive game than Ethan up until this point. And so, you know, maybe he's more likable, but this person has like run the game so far. So I don't think it's as clear cut as it might have otherwise been.
Yeah. Also, this season, I know we don't like to talk about it, but the edge of extinction is there. And Liana, I feel like that even if Ethan goes out at some point, I feel like a return from the edge of extinction and an Underwood-esque return, I feel like is not out of the realm of possibility for him either.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a definite possibility, especially because when you think about the things that actually, as much as we may not want to look back, made Chris Underwood successful was mm-hmm. being with all of these people on the edge of extinction and being able to build really strong bonds with them. And I think if Ethan is out there with all of these winners, I think people are just going to be drawn to him. And I think he's somebody that if you're going to send one person back into the game to be your champion that you're going to root for, Ethan would just be the person, of course, mm-hmm. you would want to root for. And so I think if he's able to come back into the game and make it to the final three, I mean, I think that is a slam dunk win for him.
Mike, and if you think that after 39 days in Africa, the edge of extinction is going to bother Ethan, think again.
Yeah, he's going to build a boma around that mass just to make sure that nobody gets to it. I don't know. Here's my hot take, and it's sort of tangential to Ethan, more about the edge of extinction. But I personally do not think someone who comes back from the edge of extinction is going to win this season unless they don't spend a significant amount of time there. If they spend like two rounds there, just because let's remember that the very last thing these people saw before coming out was the end of Edge of Extinction, and specifically the fallout from the fandom with regards to the Edge of Extinction.
I don't think they saw the fallout. I think that they left the day of the finale. I think they might have seen the show, but they were not around for social media by the aftermath of the show, you know, we'll find out eventually how much of it they saw. I don't think they got the backlash.
Just imagine they left after the finale, like, wow, that was amazing. Let's do something like that. And then they get back exciting. And they finally read the fallout and they're like, what did we do?
What an acceptable winner.
Well, yeah. That's the thing. It's like, even outside of the social media, though, like, I wonder what their reaction was to like, hey, here's a person who was voted out, something that the vast majority of you haven't done. And they won. Like, I wonder if they put themselves in the situation of the jury, if they would have made the same decision. And so that really, you know, we talked about this on the draft podcast that Liana and I did with Ali and Akiva back in June as to like what the criteria might be for people to decide a winner from this season. And I have to imagine at least something that's going to incorporate into this season in particular is this idea of like, if you were voted out day 9 and you come back on day 35, I'm not giving you a vote because mm-hmm. that we don't want that to be the representation of the winner of the season.
I do think it's tricky, though, because the concept of Edge of Extinction almost requires that you be willing to vote for somebody that comes back from Edge of Extinction if you were on Edge of Extinction, because otherwise, what's the point of being there, right? Because you have to admit to yourself, well, if I got back in, I would want to win. I would want people to vote for me. And so why would the thing that you don't want to disqualify you disqualify other people who are in a similar position, right? There's a little bit of cognitive dissonance there that I think helps people along to the idea that it is okay to vote for somebody that comes back from Edge, because that could have been me and I would want somebody to vote for me.
Okay.
Nah. I don't know. I have a feeling it's going to be like, you're just going to you're not going to make that connection.
No, I don't think you consciously make that connection, but I think the thing that makes it okay for you to feel like you should win subconsciously also helps make it feel okay that other people from Edge can also win.
Yeah. the winners, although their whole thing is like, hey, I didn't get voted out. So I wonder if they might, you know, all that's always a part of them. Like, no. The idea of the game is don't get voted out. I wonder if this particular jury might not be as flexible in terms of how they think about it as the Edge of Extinction jury was. But time will only tell on that. All right. Anything else on Ethan that we want to say before we move on?
So, you know, he used his first $1 million to create Grassroots Soccer, yes, which is an amazing organization. I'm hopeful he wins the $2 million because I have a business proposition for him.
Oh, boy.
That I really hope, you know, obviously he was the patenter of the great Easy Bowl.
Yes.
The only bowl that's a spoon. I want to work with him if we have the capital on the Easy Spoon, which is the only spoon that's a bowl. I feel like he hasn't hit that reverse yet, and we just need the funds to be able to do so.
Mike, how many people in the audience do you think know what you're talking about?
About negative 5%.
But I am one of those people that Ethan Zahn invented a cereal bowl that had a straw in it and was trying to get the patent going. I think he brought it like on the early show after he got voted out to try to, you know, get the ball rolling.
I definitely saw those when cereal, I was a kid.
Right?
Yeah. I think somebody else might have beat him to the punch on getting it out to market.
I think I owned one of those as a kid.
Move over, Wendell. I think we found a new like benefactor around camp. Like, guys, I made these great things out of coconut shells. You can sip up the broth after you eat the fish.
Oh, man. Think about how many fire tokens he'll earn from trading bowls with spoons or straws or whatever your idea was, Mike.
All right. One other thing that Ethan also is, I don't think people realize how funny Ethan is. I think that people think that he's sort of like, okay, he's like a very much kind of like a dry personality, but he is incredibly funny. And for whatever reason, like he doesn't let that side of him out that much. But anybody that spends any amount of time with him is going to really enjoy being in his company. I think that's another thing that's going to help him. All right. Let's talk about somebody who... Here she is, Dani Boatwright, back from Survivor Guatemala. Okay, Mike, you said that you are a, much like Jordan Kalish, a Survivor Guatemala expert. What does it mean to you to have Dani Boatwright back?
The curse has been lifted. Hooray! Let's celebrate. We thought for years and years that production had heat stroke and just forgot about Survivor Guatemala. Sans, I mean, even when they brought back Stephanie, they sort of like disregarded her Guatemala appearance. Like, yeah, she's a hero. Legend Stephanie LaGrossa. And they didn't really acknowledge a lot of the cast, which is sad because I believe Survivor Guatemala is the most underrated season of all time. I think it has a really, really fun cast. And I'm so glad that they are acknowledging it in some right in the form of Dani Boatwright, who's also in a really interesting position because I think she is one of the most underreported winners of all time with what she was able to do.
Okay.
I love Dani so much. I'm really excited to see her back because, I mean, I guess you could say this about probably all the players that we're talking about tonight. I never expected to see them back playing. And so to have Dani here, she is somebody who, I mean, when I first watched her season, I was like, yeah, this is fine. But as I went back and rewatched, I think I noticed more of the intricacies of her game. And I think she is somebody who is both a strong social player, but also knows when she has to risk it. Like with the Survivor auction, she got the advantage that helped her and the fact that she was able to infiltrate the Nakum Alliance. Like, there are just so many things that I look forward to seeing if she can either replicate or what she can build on going into this new season.
Yeah,
I'm super excited to see Dani because when I first watched Guatemala, I was like, oh, she won. I thought Stephanie was going to win. Like, it was all about Stephanie. And then on a rewatch, you sort of see, oh, she was doing more. But famously, she is the person, I think, more than any other winner that claims like, oh, no. There was a lot of stuff going on that you did not see because I didn't tell the producers what I was doing. I didn't say what I was doing in my confessionals because I didn't want them to see what I was doing. I didn't want anybody to ruin it. And so I was hiding it all. And I think that's super interesting and I'm willing to take her word for it, but I love the idea that like, all right, now she's back. Like let's see it. Let's see her prove her worth here. And see if there really was a lot more to her game that we never saw.
Taryn, I've always taken exception to that. that idea of, hey, I was doing a lot more, but I didn't tell the producers what I was doing, because I was able to tell that they were able to do that. Because I feel like that for me, that I almost feel like it would be like for you, that if like people said like, oh no, there were things that I did, you didn't see them because the live feeds were off during those times. But that's actually what was going on.
Yeah, I agree. And that's sort of like, that's why I'm excited to see her back, because it's a very easy claim to make, because there's nobody that can disprove it. Unlike on Big Brother, where I'm the guy that disproves it. And so now we get to see what she's capable of. And hopefully at this point, she's not going to hide her game. But I feel like at this point, we're a little more sophisticated in terms of, and the editors are more sophisticated in terms of like catching what she's doing and making sure that we see at least some of it. Unless it's a purely social game, in which case they're really terrible at showcasing it. So
to be fair, I think one of the large reasons why she was so reticent, at least vocally, is because she was playing with two fan favorite players. And let's remember, this is the very first time they mixed up returning players and new contestants. I don't know, Rob, if you were in the Amazon and they said, okay, we're going to bring in Kelly Wigglesworth and we're going to bring in Rudy to be, you know, to compete with you in the Amazon, would you not be at least a little suspicious that maybe if you said something, producers might use it in some sort of way to protect those people that they like?
You know, I honestly, I think at the time that I played, I don't think I would have been as sophisticated enough to think about what did the production want to have happen. I don't think I would have been as cynical at that point in time. And maybe Dani was able to suss that out in, you know, her season by season 11. But at the particular time that I played, I don't think I would have been savvy enough to be able to identify that.
Well, I think regardless of the he said, she said after it all, I can look at what I see and what I saw happen on her season. And what I saw was a player who was on the outs and was constantly battling on the outs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, yes, she wasn't voted out. Okay, so we can't say, well, she was in a situation where she knows when things go wrong, but at least we've seen her play from being on the bottom and from being on the outs. And so I think that while she hasn't had a season where she's lost and been voted out, she's at least had that other experience instead of always being on top and always being in the majority alliance.
Yep. Not to mention that, you know, she's not battling back with immunity wins or with idol finds like some of these other people. Now, she did win a couple of immunities. Yes. She won at the final six. Though I do feel like, especially in rewatching that final six episode, I did notice that Rafe did go to Dani about possibly getting rid of Judd before the whole advantage thing happened. So maybe she'd be able to skirt it. And the final three, she ends up winning, even though, again, Rafe lets go of that deal. But otherwise, she's able to really benefit. She talks about this in her final tribal council of like, I sat back, I looked around, who is in power? Stephanie and Rafe. And if you look at it from that angle, you very clearly see her specifically make bonds with Stephanie and Rafe, essentially nestling into the pocket of those that are in power, so that when they get annoyed with Jamie, when they get annoyed with Judd, when they get annoyed with Cindy, there's like, well, we like Dani, so we want to keep her around. Let's bring her into the final four instead of these people who we don't really like.
Yeah, Chris Daughtry had just done this, and she basically did a very similar thing very shortly after he did it, which is like just completely on the bottom, and then just slowly like kept surviving and weaseling your way into the big majority until you steal the win away from them, which is a very impressive way to play, and it's very different from how a lot of winners have won their season. So it's a very unique sort of take that she has on her win.
Yeah, Mike, she's famously known as the stealth bomber. She wasn't under the radar. She beat the radar that she was able to intentionally hide. This, I do feel like, this is almost a perfect setup for her to recreate that game plan if she chooses to do that.
Yeah, I think, especially of the four we're talking about right now, I think Dani is the most primed to go far. I don't know if that's going to translate to a win, but if you look at someone who is, at least at the time she was playing, like very athletic, someone who is extremely personable, but not so dangerous to a level where it's like, okay, we need to get rid of Parvati. We need to get rid of Sandra. I think that is a perfect position for her. I think she's totally part of the Ethan role. I actually think any of these four people are going to be perfect people to be in an alliance with, because all four of these people have very rarely, if at all, turned on the people they made promises to. Like even Dani, she had to make decisions because she was on the bottom. you know, and she still held true to people like Stephanie and Rafe, who she had made alliances with and had not turned on them until she had to at the end. And I think that is something that's, you know, a very, people are looking for loyalty out there. When you're swimming with the sharks, you're looking for the dolphins. And Danny is a dolphin here.
In her case.
Exactly. Just don't get too close to them. Use the hot tub. And the thing that I'm really excited about with Danny is I think if you're balancing proactiveness versus reactiveness, I think Danny is a much more reactive player than a proactive player. But I feel like reactiveness in Modern Survivor is almost becoming a better facet than proactivity, where there's just so much being thrown your way that I think if there's a live tribal council and people start getting up and whispering, I think Danny is someone that can spring into action immediately. I don't know if I can say the same thing about some of these other people.
Well, it's very hard to be proactive when the rules of the game are constantly shifting. I mean, how are you proactive when there are like new twists and devices being like thrown into the game without players even knowing that they exist, Taryn?
Well, that on top of the fact that they tend to cast as many proactive players as possible, which means that they're all just constantly targeting each other in a very hectic game where the format and the rules and the twists are changing all of the things all the time. And this season, even more so with the money stuff and all of these winners.
Fire tokens.
Right. So absolutely this Danny, Ethan, these kinds of players are, I think, definitely primed to be in a better spot. Like when I talk about most of these winners, it's like, well, flip the coin, whether or not they go early or do well, because they're going to be targeted or they're going to win or they're going to like survive. Right. Whereas people like Ethan, people like Danny, I think are a lot more likely to have a stable, more steady time on Survivor Winners at War. I do think that Danny might actually have a little bit more of a target on her back than somebody like Ethan, again, because of this idea that the under the radar female is the one to watch out for rather than like the male. I feel like that could be in their heads. And this notion, like, I think, I don't know how entrenched some of these winners are in the, you know, community and the fan base, but if you asked like people in the know, like on a winter season, who would win? A lot of people would say somebody like Danny Boatwright. Like that has been out there. I know that's been out there. If I know that's been out there, somebody like Adam Klein knows that it's been out there. And if Adam knows it's been out there, then he's probably going to get into people's ears about like, well, you know, people talk about how she's always going to win this kind of season because that's the kind of, she is the perfect representation of that kind of player. And so I think that that advantage is counteracted a little bit more than it is with Ethan, but it's still the fact that she is that archetype is good for her because there's so many other big targets to worry about. So that's going for it.
I think that's the thing is if you're looking at a group of people and you're just like, who's going to vote on Danny? I don't know. Maybe as that first vote of like, oh, you're trying to figure out what to do. And then maybe Adam Klein is able to get into the ear of a lot of people. But I think that's a very unique set of circumstances.
Mm-hmm. I love this idea of like, all right, if we're thinking of it, then Adam Klein is definitely thinking of it. He's our man on the inside.
He knows what's up. But I think you also have some other women on this season who also could be described as the under the radar player, you know, so like Michelle, for example, is somebody who also fills that archetype. So, you know, it's not, she's not the only one. Although I mean, I can see it being a reason why she's targeted, but just, I think she sort of falls in the same boat as Ethan is, okay, maybe she doesn't have all those connections. Let's pull her in. Let's work with her. We know that she's loyal and she's somebody who has, who doesn't have the same issues as Ethan as, you know, not to say that Danny hasn't lived a wonderful life, I'm sure, but like, it's not as from a storytelling perspective as gripping. So she doesn't seem maybe as big of a threat to take into the final three. And so I can see her potentially making a deep run and making it to the end. Now, will she garner the respect of the jury in order to win if she does make it there? That I don't know.
Well, we know she's great at like crafting a narrative after the fact, whether it happened or not.
Right.
So yeah, I'd feel good about her chances in the final too.
It is interesting though, because I think that if you're comparing Danny and Ethan, if you're talking about jury management, give me Danny over Ethan any day. I will say one of the foibles of Ethan's game is he might give one of the worst final tribal council performances for a winner that I've ever seen. Whereas Danny came in with a jury that was very anti-Steph, but she played into them completely saying like, I'm going to be honest here. I'm going to be transparent. And they vilified Steph for being anything but that. And I think Danny excels very well at like telling people what they want to hear. My sticking point with Dani is even pre-merge, she was in a very good position on both of her tribes. She was the swing vote a couple times, but she was definitely still in that old school mentality of like, I'm the swing vote and I hate it. You know, I hate crushing someone's dreams. Yeah. I don't want to be there. If she carries that into Survivor, and if she like almost denies a position of power because it's a tough decision to make, that's not a great move nowadays when things move so quickly.
You know, Dani is also one of these people that I've never met her. I've don't know anybody that really has any sort of interaction with her. I'm sure Sandra probably in some way or another has kept up with her in terms of, I feel like that she's friendly with a lot of the winners, but I don't even know if Dani's watching the show. I mean, I'm sure she watched some seasons, but is Dani regularly watching Survivor? Does she, know the history of all these other players? Mike, I can't guarantee that.
I think she's more likely to watch SEAL Team than Survivor, that's for sure.
What a good show. Yes. I love the lead actor.
She'll probably be watching the Amazon Wheel of Time series that Rafe is heading up.
I wouldn't guarantee that. That relationship did not end on a great note. He did not vote for her. Yeah.
It's true. The only one, yeah. What a big year for Guatemala it would be, though.
What a big year.
If she won, and then Wheel of Time was a success.
So I agree, she's not threatening, but in terms of like a... Does everybody there even know who she is? I mean, and I don't mean that they're going to be threatened by her, but are they going to want to work with her when there are so many other people that the people might have connections with? I feel like that she's a real outsider, Liana.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I didn't think about it from that perspective of like, oh, well, if she's sort of the one on the outs, right? Because even Ethan has Rob and has Amber, but if Dani... Like, man, it was difficult to come up with, who that other person would be for Ethan. I have no idea who that person would be for Dani. I think she is capable of making those connections if given a little bit of time. But if, I could see a world where she's the first one out because she isn't given that opportunity. I think in the same vein of having those relationships with other people, you have to be able to garner the respect of the other winners. And I would just wonder if that's something that would be an issue for her either to make it farther as somebody who's an ally or to win in the end.
I would not be surprised at all. And I think Akiva made this prediction on our podcast. I would not be surprised if she was the merge boot for this season, because I think I'm going back to like the Game Changers merge where it was like, okay, let's all come together and agree on a target, either Haley or Michaela. I could see a situation here where if Dani makes it through, maybe, her challenge prowess is able to keep her along. They get to the merge and they're like, well, she's a threat for individual challenges and nobody really has that close of a connection with her. This is a very easy way to sort of placate the masses, keep everyone simmering before the pot really boils over when we get down to really slitting throats. She's a good person to just get rid of that everyone's reasonably okay with.
Mike, do you know anything about Dani having arthritis? This is a question that I saw in the chat. Liv asks, do we know how severe Dani's arthritis is? Is that a known thing?
That's a good question. I don't think I've read up on it. I mean, obviously, it has not been as big of a news item as some of the other medical issues from the people that we're talking about today. I'm not seeing it too much. I mean, she'd have to pass a medical examination to get back onto the show. So you'd have to imagine, I don't know how much it's going to affect her individual performance abilities, but at least not to the extent that it was going to keep her from getting onto the show.
Okay. I did a quick Google. I have a quote from an article where she was interviewed. She said, I have arthritis in my thumbs and I need to start the fire. She said, so that's going to be.
All right. Well, final four, she's screwed.
Okay. All right.
Potentially an issue.
So, all right, let's just real quick. All right. Ethan or Dani, who's going further in the game, Taryn, of the two people we've talked about so far?
Because of what I said, I think my money would be on Ethan.
Ethan. Liana?
I think I'm... Oh, my God. I think I'm going to go with Dani.
Okay, Dani. Michael.
I'm going to hold with my completely illogical guess that she is the merge boot, along with my horrible B&B predictions, and say that Ethan makes it further.
Okay. I'll go with Ethan, too. All right. So three Ethans, one Dani of who's going further. All right. Let's talk about Yule. All right. Taryn, here he is. He's back. Yule Kwan, winner of season 13. He's back 27 seasons later for the Winners at War. Well, can you believe it?
I can't believe it. It's, I mean, we just talked about Ethan. Yule was my guy. Like, right, I came back to Survivor, like I started like paying more attention, getting back into it more, and Yule was my new favorite winner. I loved Yule. I loved Cook Islands. People always hated Cook Islands, and I was like, nah, it's like the best season ever, guys.
I was talking to Shannon Gus about this, and I'm like, I feel like Yule is the most Taran like winner of the show, so this like completely validates it for me.
Totally. He was like the most like assertively cerebral player in terms of, you know, and he's a very physical guy, sure. But you, because you had Ozzy, who was just like so much better than everybody else, Yule became the sort of like, well, I'm the guy who's going to tell you about the physics, about like staying on a tree. And I just loved that as like a nerdy kid. I was totally into it. I loved the sort of politician take on the game. I loved that he was so calm and rational and thoughtful about everything, and the way that he played the game a little bit like, you know, Rob Mariano in his first season was like, I'm the mob boss, but Yule felt like a mob boss, like a little bit, right? Like, hey, I've got an offer you can't refuse. I've got an item here.
Yeah. He famously has the moment where he's able to flip things at the merge. And I'm trying to remember the exact circumstances, but that he gets Penner to flip at the merge because he has the God Idol, and he says, hey, basically, I'm going to use this, and so you could either be on my side or not, and then forces Penner's hand to vote against his tribe.
Yeah, and there are a few moments like that too, like with Cowboy. Cowboy has a dream about how to get rid of the idol, and he tells it to Yule, and Yule is kind of just like, all right, just let me give you a hug here and slide the knife into your back because you know my secret and like how to beat it. And then the flipping Penner with the idol, and then making a deal with Jonathan, being like, all right, I'll whack Penner for you, but you got to give me your vote at the end. Yeah. Like,
and that won him the game. Adam said, I would have voted for Ozzy, but I made that promise to you. I guess now I'm realizing if we ever do a reboot of the Netflix series, we could call it Yule and just put Yule in there.
Yeah, it's great stuff. And the story of the season too, where they get mutinied and then have to like win challenges to keep up their numbers, and then just barely flip to maintain the majority. And then the battle between the strategic game of Yule and the physical game of Ozzy, all great stuff. And there's a lot of interesting things that Yule goes through throughout the season. But of course, the main sort of thing that we always look at when it comes to Yule is the God Idol that he had. It was so powerful, and he had it for most of the season. And it definitely was a part of why he was able to flip Penner. And so another winner where I'm like, I'm so glad I get to see him again, because I want to see what he's capable of without having an overpowered item in the game.
Yeah, and just for our younger viewers who may not know Cook Islands particularly well, so the hidden immunity idol at that point in time, so it gets introduced in Survivor Guatemala, and Gary Hogaboom / Hawkins ends up playing it there. Terry carries it with him all the way through. He never ends up using it. And then Yule has that same idol. It gets to be played. It's you don't even have to play it, right, Mike? It's just that if somebody votes for you, it's like, well, I had the idol, so you, can, you can't vote
for
me.
For you newer kids, it's basically the super idol from Survivor Ko Rong, where you don't have to play it before the votes are read. Essentially, if you get the majority of the votes, you just use it. It's sort of just like it's like a shield almost. And what Yule benefited from was the fact that first he found her in episode 2, so he had it essentially since day 6, but this was the very first season to feature a final 3, and not only that, they sprung it on the contestants at the final 4, and the God Idol was good through the final 4. So you'll happen to have that compass in his pocket, and you know, even if he got votes for him, they were going to deflect anyway, so he was basically guaranteed final 3 once that announcement was made, because he had the compass in his pocket.
Okay. Yeah, and it was still something you could deal with. You just had to spend around burning it, right? You had to, and this is what Cowboy dreamed up, which is that you have to split the votes, put a majority on the person with the idol, and then he he will be forced to use it. Then he will no longer have it. And then the secondary person you put votes on will not, will be the person that goes home. But of course, in order to split votes like that, you need to have a majority that allows you to split votes like that, which was not always the case.
Yeah. I mean, even Yule at the merge was like, I might as well tell people about this idol because they don't have enough numbers to split the votes. And I've always held the adage that if you have a super idol, the thing you want to do is tell people about it, because yeah, it's something you could very easily, just like Yule did with Jonathan, be like, well, guess what? If you're voting for me, I'm just going to vote for you, and then you're going to be gone. And it's an easy way to sort of scare people off of that. And so to the point where even the next round, Yule, I think it was when he was in the bubble bath, or no, Parvati was in the bubble bath. Yeah. And so he's like, you know what? I have the idol. Let me just show it, which was perfect because then nobody came after him the rest of the season. They maybe came after other people, but they couldn't because they knew, hey, if we take a shot at Yule, and because he's in a position of power, he can very easily aim that back at me.
Now, Liana, do you have any special attachment to Yule?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think he's somebody he's so cerebral, and I think that that's something that I appreciate. But I don't know. It's so hard now when I start to evaluate what his game might look like into this season, because when I look back on a season, I think I feel similarly to Taryn. You know, it was like, oh, yeah, wow, he just had such command of the game. It was so amazing. I really felt a connection to him. But my God, talk about having a benefit in this game. I mean, if you're going to have that idol for pretty much, like Mike said, the entire game, and to not really be at risk, I think, one, of course, it gives you the benefit of just being safe from the votes. But I think it also gives you a sense of mental calm. And I think that's something that Yule is known for. And I think it's something that is part of his personality, just from the sense that I get. But having that super idol, I mean, just makes it, you're not necessarily going to have that paranoia. You're able to stay calm because you have essentially this, you know, I was going to make a Monopoly analogy, and now I'm skip.
He put the hotel basically on Baltic Avenue on like the second turn of the game, right? So like every
Baltic
time someone
Avenue,
was trying
you, that's like the worst spot on the board, Mike.
Boardwalk.
Hard I was place. Mixing up my bees.
I don't know. For some reason, I was thinking of Get Out of Jail Free, and then all I could think of was like the thimble, and then didn't they remove the thimble as a piece because nobody wanted to be the thimble? Anyway,
yeah, thimble was canceled.
Not important. So anyway, just to go back to the point I was trying to make, if we think about a player who's never voted out, who never has that sense of, oh, everything is going wrong, I feel like Yule is on the opposite side of that spectrum. Not only has he not gone through that, but he's also had this security blanket, this get out of jail free card in his pocket for an entire game. And so that really, really worries me coming into this new season.
But I think if there's anyone to have that realization, it would be Yule. Like, what I think is so interesting about some of these people who have never been voted out before is a certain amount of them are going to walk in and be like, you know what, I made these mistakes, but like overall I won at the end of the day, so I don't really need to focus on those. I do feel like Yule is smart enough, and there's enough time away from his season that he could veritably think through things. I mean, again, he lost by one vote to Ozzy, and he recognized throughout that season there were a couple times when he was toying with getting rid of Ozzy because he knew he'd be such a threat in the end. I do wonder if Yule is somebody who is going to come in with a different status to like, okay, I did end up winning, but it was close. What can I do to change that? And one thing that I hope he does change is Yule, for being this puppet master figure that Taryn talks about, he is surprisingly transparent. Extremely transparent. He's talking with Becky about like, hey, you know what, maybe if I go to the end with Jonathan, I think I have a better chance of winning, which is like, it's crazy that someone's talking jury odds with you and not like balking at them. You know, even when he's trying to vote out Penner's like, hey, you know, I hope I'm safe tonight. And Yule's like, well, maybe. I forgot how surprisingly non-duplicitous Yule can be. And it might cut both ways in this game.
Yeah. And there's the moment where Penner, when he gets voted out, and he says, I'd like to get my hat back, please. And
yeah, then that's the biggest one, is when Yule gives the hat back and everyone calls him out. Even Probst calls him out. And Yule finally admits like, yeah, it was jury management. At the final tribal council, they're like, Yule, were you not doing blatant jury management? And Yule has to admit that he does. And it worked there because, again, people really respected the strategic acumen he had. But if he pulls the same tactics here, I don't know if in modern Survivor, that's something you can kind of gloss over. When everyone is so gamey, when someone is so open with those types of things, I think it makes you a little more dangerous than it was back in season 13.
I think it might be the opposite, though. I think people are more open about their gamesmanship in modern seasons, and they're more open to talk about voting blocks and like, well, of course I'm going to maybe blindside you. Like, that's part of the game. Like, what do you want me to do? So I feel like, I agree. I think that overall he's too, like, he was so blatantly cerebral on the show because he was so blatantly cerebral in the game.
Right.
And I think that more than anything is what's going to be his downfall. Like, because especially around winners, I think it's more the attitude than his words that I don't think winners want to feel like, what a puppet master he was. He got us all. Like, he was the mob boss, you know, he got us. I don't think that the winners want to feel that way. Not most people don't want to feel that way, but the Cook Islands cast were like, you know what? He was a genius. But the winners, they feel like they're geniuses and they don't want to be out geniused.
Liana, it's been a long layoff for Yul. He's had a lot of time to think about what he could do differently, especially if he doesn't have this idol. What adjustment do you think Yul could make in between Cook Islands and Winners at War?
Well, I think there's two questions. What adjustment should he make? Mm-hmm. And what adjustments will he make? Because I think that those might be have two different answers. So I think in terms of the adjustments that he probably should make coming into this, I think, you know, having this sort of air of I'm smart, I'm confident, I know what's going on. Downplay that a little bit. Because like Taryn said, I don't think that that's necessarily going to go over all that well. Now, I think what is Yul going to do is probably not that. I think he's super smart and he's definitely expressed interest in playing again. I know we talk about, players that... like that we would never see again. But I think even in, when he's done coverage with you, Rob, although it was, I think, a long time ago.
It must have been what? Season 22, 23? Who is?
Yeah, I think you called him during 25 to talk about Penner at some point.
Oh, maybe.
Okay, yeah. So I think he definitely expressed interest, and I think that he is tuned into the gameplay. So I don't think it's going to be the adjusting to the gameplay that's going to be an issue. If we talk about all of these sort of bells and whistles that are now thrown in here, I think it's really going to be just sort of the air that he carries himself with, sort of the attitude, the way that he approaches the other players, really the social game aspect. I just don't know how well that's going to be received, and I don't know if he will or will be able to make the adjustments that I think are necessary.
Real quick, Caitlin Ash says, real quick. Question, did Yul accept your LinkedIn request?
Again, that's a negative 5% that he accepted that. Yes, Liana, nor myself, nor Ali Lasher have been accepted yet in our LinkedIn. Here's my other question, speaking of social media. Is anyone who votes off Yul, do they get their Facebook doxed as a result of doing that?
Is he a active Facebook employee?
Wasn't there controversy because he was like in charge of making sure the privacy was on the up and up and then was like caught with like figuring out a loophole to invade people's privacy? Like, it was pretty bad. I remember being pretty disappointed.
Let's Google that and make sure we have the facts straight on that story. But I did see something, some link about Yul and Facebook controversy.
Well, yeah, he was given the term privacy Sherpa. So, I mean, right. If you have pilots and passengers, do we have what, like Sherpas and mountain climbers?
What a great nickname for Survivor if he could be the privacy Sherpa out there. It'd be good.
Look, guys, I promise I worked at Facebook. I'm great at privacy. Mm-hmm. I will not ruin any plans.
Yeah. Well, now he works at Google. He's probably out there with a bunch of Google Minis and Google Homes being like, would you like a free one?
Man, real upgrade from the Spy Shack, planting the Google Homes everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. Mike, how do you think it's going to go for Yul here after this long layoff?
I really want to see him do well. And, you know, we heard him. He was the one that was speaking the most about the fire tokens and how it adds a new thing to the game. I feel like if there's someone who can game his way through these new elements the most, it would be Yul. And I would love to see Yul back because, again, he's a super interesting character who had a very interesting thought about the game. But to Liana's point, I could very much see a situation like we saw in Survivor Millennials versus Gen X where Yul is sticking through a plan. He's laying out the shells, explaining his thoughts, and people are like, okay, he's a little too dangerous being able to think through this. I don't know if we can let him get that far. And I wonder in this case if his reputation and his brain precedes him where, you know, it's going to bite him in the butt at the end of the day.
Taryn, I'm very worried about Yule. I really am. I think that I could see him going out very early in this game. I think that people don't know him. They have, other than Parvati, I think that people have almost no relationship with him. And then on top of that, what do people know? Oh, Yule, he's brilliant. He's incredibly smart. I think that those are two big strikes for Yule going into this game.
Very unlike Ethan and Danny, Yule's path to victory in his season was being a leader and gathering people around him that he could control for the most part, or at least direct, work closely with, trust that they wouldn't betray him, and then position and maneuver those people in the right way. That's a hard game to accomplish in a modern season by itself. Like, we haven't really seen that kind of gameplay in a while anyway, except for maybe Ghost Island, where we saw two people kind of doing that. But on a winter season where everybody's a leader and or at least most of them are leaders, most of them feel like they should be the ones directing in the driver's seat, in the pilot seat. I feel like it's going to be very difficult for him to replicate that kind of game, which means he needs a complete tonal shift. And I don't know if that's we haven't seen him do that. So I don't know if he's capable of it. It'll be very interesting to see, but it's just so hard to see where he fits in with the other people. He doesn't seem to have a lot of connections to the other castmates. And like who pulls Yule in as a number? He's too dangerous for that. Like, this guy, he's too smart. He's too charismatic. He's not somebody I can control. I don't want him as a number. I want him as a partner, but I've already got my partner from, you know, Heroes versus Villains. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know. I think this might be a tricky one. He is one of very few people in Survivor history who can say that they voted out Parvati, though.
Mm-hmm. Liana, what do you think the status of that relationship is between Yule and Parvati?
I mean, I think that he's gone on record saying that he respects her gameplay. Mm-hmm. Now, whether or not she knows that, I don't know. But I think that if they can really repair any type of, issues that they've had in the past, I think it could be an asset. I think we could see something similar to sort of the, you know, Ethan, Boston, Rob, Amber situation where it's, you know, you see a friendly face. Yeah. But Yule at the same time also doesn't really strike me as like needing that person that he wants to talk to, or really sort of taking the time to make sure that he really rebuilds that bond. So I think it's definitely a possibility for him to recover that relationship if it is indeed still damaged. But whether or not he will go and do that, I don't think that's something that we would see.
But let's look at that conversely, though, because I know, Rob, you're going to talk about Parvati, but I think Parvati is in a big position of danger as well in those initial stages. And so I could see her looking to be like, Yule's my guy. And I think in terms of like, you know, building the bridge, she doesn't end up voting for Yule. But I think even Parvati, it's even in Micronesia that she regretted some of the ways that she behaved in Cook Islands. And so I'm sure she, especially as someone who's like, okay, I was very young and, you know, impudent back then. Like, we're adults now. We're parents. Let's, you know, move forward and be friendly faces to one another.
Yeah, I think unless you had like a blood feud with somebody, I really feel like anybody you have even met, whatever your experience was, as long as it wasn't absolutely a disaster, I feel like that people are going to gravitate to people that they have spent time with before. And I think that if Parvati and Yule end up on the same tribe together, they're definitely going to work together.
Chris G in the chat said, what about Tony? Could he work with Tony? And that, I love that pair. I would love for those two to work together. Mm-hmm. Imagine Yule, Parvati on the outs. They need Tony, also doesn't have a ton of connections. Those three working together.
Yeah.
This is why I love this season.
Well, that's the thing. That was the one thing I was going to say, is I think the one out Yule's going to have is if he works with a wild card. Mm-hmm. You talk about Cowboy, and he's very good at managing wild cards. Yeah. And I feel like Tony is somebody, I think the person he needs to be in alliance with is someone who needs, quote unquote, like the brain. of the group. And I feel like Tony needs a sounding board sometimes.
Well,
that's why Trish was so important to his game, right? This was someone who could really confide in and who could like reciprocate. They could have a conversation back and forth. And I feel like Tony could find that in Yul of like, he knows what he's talking about. I'm going to throw some ideas out. He's going to talk them back to me. He's going to be like one of those Google Homes.
I love it. I want them that's to great. Work. Please hope. I really hope they're on the same track.
You know, as I'm looking at the board a little bit more, you know, that for other people that are there really without like a main ally, that I wonder if like, I feel like that Denise would be somebody that would be like, oh, like here's like another normal person that would be great to have around. I would love that. I feel like Sophie, who we're going to talk about in a minute, I feel like that she would be thrilled to have Yul around. I saw in the chat about Adam Klein that I bet he would be very excited. I think that they were both Stanford alumni. I think he would be very excited to have Yul around. So I feel like that there are people that, and Danny Boatwright, I think that this is something that gets overlooked, but when you go through the Survivor experience, you really do get to know the people that played the season before you and the season after you, because those are the people when you go to whatever sort of like functions are there, those are the people that you see. And I'm sure that somebody who he played right around that time, you know, that she wins 11, he wins 13. I bet their paths crossed at some point at one time or another. So I bet that they're people that, like, if Danny and Yul end up together, I feel like that they could potentially work together.
Yeah, if he amasses like a small group, a small group of people, I could see that working. I just feel like it's a lot of like circumstance. He has to fall into the right place and he has to survive with that group. I don't think he'll be a part of a majority. I feel like that's where I have a hard time seeing him fit in.
I could potentially see that small group where it's like with Sophie there potentially, and it's like, oh yeah, sure, Yul thinks he's the mastermind, but like we all think we're the mastermind. Then everybody sort of thinks that within that group, and so that's why they're okay with keeping everybody around, because they're like the smart kids of the group. I could see that playing out. I don't know, I want to almost say like I'm sorry Taryn in advance, just because I'm worried about Yul on this season and I don't think he's gonna make it very far, but fingers crossed.
Well, it's interesting, Rob, essentially what you're sort of prognosticating here is sort of like a blood versus water scenario where it's like people who know each other and the singles. You know, people who didn't play on seasons with these other people, where, you know, could we see a BVW1 situation where it's like, okay, all these singles are going to rally together. Like, you don't know this person. Like, we don't know any of these people. Let's just all work together. Or it could be a BVW2 situation where everyone, all the groups that like know each other, decides to just all work together and try to wipe out as many singles as possible. Though, not to get too far into Natalie Anderson, but we saw how that worked out and how she demolished all those groups.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other thoughts on Yul? All right.
Accept my friend request, please.
Accept your friend request. All right. We're going to talk about Sophie coming up. But first, let me just thank our sponsor. Those are our friends over at Zip Recruiter. And of course, that they are, they'll definitely accept your friend request. It's a new year. The perfect opportunity to take your business to the next level by hiring the right people. But finding the qualified candidates can be challenging. That's why you need to head over to ZipRecruiter.com/survive to make life easier. ZipRecruiter is going to send your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. And as applications come in, ZipRecruiter is going to analyze each one like Yul and spotlight the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/survive. That's ZipRecruiter.com/survive. That's SURVIVE. ZipRecruiter.com/survive. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, let's talk about another smarty here. Let's talk about Sophie Clark, the winner of Survivor South Pacific, the person on this panel that I believe has the most Rob Has a Podcast appearances of the four that we're talking about here today. Liana, are you excited for the return of So Fierce?
I am definitely looking fierce forward. No, to her return. She's somebody who, when I think of I don't know, who I respect in terms of really being able to articulate the strategy of Survivor, Sophie is the first person that comes to mind. She is somebody who has demonstrated, you know, not only on her season, but then in her appearances afterwards talking about the game, that she really understands the strategy. And I'm just giddy thinking about the fact that she's going to be out there and having to play with a crazy cast, but also all of the sort of game mechanics that are now introduced into the season.
Yeah.
So she's somebody who I'm very much looking forward to. I think, you know, when we talk about some of the details of her season, we can talk about like what she's actually experienced and how that might impact her game. But I think just because she has such a cerebral mind and knows the ways to go, I think that even though maybe she hasn't dealt with a huge number of obstacles like some of our other players, I still feel good about her chances in this season.
Mike, you know, it's interesting that I was going back and I was listening to the Evolution of Strategy and I was listening to the South Pacific chat. Chapter, and when we're going through the winner rankings, that I'm comparing Sophie with Ethan and with Danny as three of the winners who are under the radar players. And it's interesting that not only are they in this season together, but they're ending up lumped into this podcast together where we're talking about them. But different paths for these three different under the radar winners to get to the end.
Yeah, though I think Sophie's probably the closest tied to Ethan, right? It's this idea of sort of being in a majority alliance, making a close bond with a few people early on and sticking to that. I totally co-sign what Liana said. I love Sophstradamus. She has been so prophetic in your podcast. Like, she was the first one to say that as brilliant as the Three Amigos Tribal Council was, it wasn't going to work out well for them. She was the first one to call Tony as like a big strategic force in Survivor Kagayama when we thought he was just a big buffoon before he was a $1 million buffoon. Like Liana said, she has such an interesting approach to the game and just the bare essentials. She's so observant. And I think that's what has made her such a good Survivor player. I know that the Bloom household is very much behind Sophie. In the seasons that I've shown to Angela Bloom while I was courting her, she glommed onto Sophie. Sophie is her favorite player of all time. Sophie is her avatar in this game, to the point where when I told her that the Winners at War promo was going to be dropping during the finale, she's like, I just want to see Sophie, and that's it. So I think we have some definite rooting interests here for my wife.
Does Asher also support Sophie?
I think Asher supports whoever looks like the contestant from The Masked Singer, because that's really the thing that rivets him the most. So I guess whoever wears the most colorful flash clothing, which looks like Tyson from the preview, considering he's dressed like, a little bit like Martina Navratilova or one of the... Yeah, I think that the thing about Sophie that I really like, and I think what's going to make her the most appealing as an ally out of not only this group, but out of everybody, is that she is someone who stuck with the group and had many inflection points where she's with someone like Albert, who's like, let's jump here. But she had the wisdom and the foresight to be like, that's not my optimal path right
Stay
now.
On target.
Exactly. And I think, you know, it's one thing to be like in Rob Zombies in season 22 and not have that opportunity to jump. It's another one to have that opportunity presented to you a number of times and have the ability to resist that temptation and to think ahead and be like, no, that's not the right course for me right now. Let me, you know, it's a marshmallow test. Let me deny the marshmallow now because I'll get a million marshmallows at the end. And I think that's a really valued thing in an ally, that you can trust that they're going to make the right decisions that'll work out for the benefit of the group.
Yeah. Actually, I just saw Albert. He was at the Survivor.
Oh, right. We saw him at the 39 finale.
That's right. He was in Ronnie Barda's entourage.
Yes, I remember. He was not very happy about getting his phone confiscated for a little bit.
Yeah, didn't like that. He's in the poker playing crew. Taryn, what are your thoughts on Sophie?
I think she's a really interesting player. Again, another one that I'm really excited to see play again, because, you know, watching her on her first and only season, she's one of these players where she really just rode the same plan for a long time and it worked. And so you're tempted to kind of be like, well, did she kind of back into it? Did she luck into it in some way? But I got the sense from Sophie that she was very intelligent and always cognizant of her position in the game. She realized that where she was working and there wasn't any need to change. And so I'm very curious to see if that's the case, and how it translates to a situation where she does need change, and if she's able to on the fly make those changes and reposition herself, because we've never really seen her have to do that. So I'm really, really interested to see, just from a data standpoint, how she operates on a season like this. I think that she, you know, having heard her analysis, is the player that I sort of saw in terms of this, you know, very analytical, intelligent player that is capable of analyzing situations. It's just a matter of, can that apply to the show itself when everything is moving around you at a million miles an hour? We did see her get a little bit emotional at times, you know, a little bit overwhelmed, it seemed, at times on her season. And I wonder, again, like what that will translate to. How calculated was that at the time? Is she going to have trouble when the going gets rough? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm really, really interested to see her play. I'm definitely rooting for her. I think that she has at least a couple connections, just based on, like, loosely, you know, she seems to be tight with Kim, right? Like, so
I don't know if I'd say that tight. I think she actually comes in with very few real connections here in this group. I think that she's actually hurt the most by Cochran not being here. I mean, Cochran would be a real ride or die for her. I think that Sophie's actually hurting for people that are out there who might be dying to work with her.
I feel like that's not a terrible thing for her, though, because, I mean, like, if you look at the people she worked with on her season, they're strange.
A strange
bunch. Yeah. Like, she was able to fit in with people that I don't think she liked a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. Right. And remember when everyone was, you know, she was part of the God tribe, right? She's someone who's not that religious, but she was able to, like, blend in and become a number one ally of the leader coach, who was just very devoutly beating that drum over someone like Brandon Hance, who was probably one of the more committed members from a religious perspective, but it matters from a personal one. Robert, I want to ask you, because I think one of the downsides of Sophie's game, and something that did promote that emotional breakdown that Taryn talked about, was at the time you had Ozzy decrying her, being like, you're a spoiled brat, you're condescending, you don't do anything around camp. And she said in that final tribal council, like, I learned that the way I come off is not the greatest from a social perspective, and I'm working on changing that. From your perspective, I mean, Sophie has gone through so much since her time on the show, and as someone who knows her personally, do you feel like that part of her personality has changed fundamentally? Or do you still feel like there is a bit of that, you know, dry, sort of blunter tone to Sophie?
So I've known Sophie for, you know, years now. I'm trying to think of how many years it's been since Survivor Sally. Actually, it was the fall of 2011 that aired. So, you know, 8 years in between when she played. I think she was only 21 years old when she went on to play, which is amazing, because that she seems, you know, way more mature than a 21-year-old in that season. So I'm sure just some, even if you didn't go on Survivor, the person you are at 21 is going to be a lot different than the person you are at, you know, 28, 29. She's accomplished so much in her career professionally. And I love Sophie. Sophie has been an extremely, you know, fun person that I've gotten to know. And she's a great podcast guest. And I think that one of the reasons why that she is especially great on the podcast is because I don't think she minces her words. That would be my concern with her, in terms of, I do think that she is somewhat blunt at times. And while that makes for incredible podcasting, I just wonder that if she is always going to be able to, you know, put on a happy face with the other survivors that are out there.
Yeah, I think about the way that she communicates, and she's somebody who is very straightforward, like you said. And I think that, how is that going to be interpreted? Is that going to be something where the other contestants think, oh, this is refreshing to have somebody who's communicating this way to me? Or like, whoa, pump the brakes, like, take a step back. Yeah. We're not here to deal with this. And I think, yeah, that is the biggest concern for her in terms of her social game, is that level of communication.
And so I think that for some people, it will just roll off their back and they'll be able to get along great. I know for a while that Sophie and Sandra, that there was some tension there. And I think it came from where that Sophie made a comment about Sandra wearing the tiara on the Heroes versus Villains. And, you know, I think it ended up being another one of these things where something got her and then it just ended up, you know, festering. And I just like, it's just an example of like these types of misunderstandings, Taryn, which can end up just ballooning into something. And I worry about that type of thing for Sophie.
That could be really bad news for Sophie, because I feel like Sandra and even potentially Tony, like the experience of Game Changers was all the big targets targeted each other and then all the small targets won. And I feel like if they're any capable at all of learning from that experience, they're going to be more likely to be like, okay, let's gather the big targets together so that we don't all take each other out, and let's target some of the smaller targets. And so if Sandra is in that mindset, and I have no idea if she is, I feel like that Sophie is the kind of person that she will want to target. And if there's a reason to target her over somebody like Danny or Ethan or whoever else is one of these people that Sandra might want to target, then that's especially bad news for her. Not to say that Sandra will be in a position to do that, but I do think she has a lot of connections, and Sandra being after you in general is just probably not a great thing.
Mike, in some ways, I see Sophie almost kind of like the female equivalent of Yule that we're talking about, of somebody who is their reputation is one of being extremely intelligent, strategic, and also isolated without a lot of connections from their original season.
But I think the difference is, in terms of perception, is that Yule was the ringleader strategically of the I2s, right? Sophie was more so seen, especially from an editorial perspective, as someone who, yeah, made decisions. You know, at Final Tribal Council, there's this great moment where Coach is like, you know, well, you know, I guess I made some of the wrong decisions. And Sophie's like, well, that's because I was the one really doing the strategizing, which was just like a great dunk on Coach.
She also compares her alliance with Coach to Russell's alliance with the quote unquote dumbass girls from season 19.
Yeah, he said he likened Coach to a young girl, which was like, I mean, I don't know, like she could walk so Angelina could fly in terms of like pointing out some of the gender dynamics. But you know, it's interesting because I feel like Yule's sort of reputation is being the ringleader of an alliance, but I think Sophie is going to do well in that she's going to be able to sort of step back, you know, let others do the driving, and she's more than happy to give directions in the back, because she knows when that car crashes, the driver's going to be the one getting impaled, and she's going to be the one surviving that. She has known, you know, as long as I'm in a good position and I feel like I'm in a position to win, then I can very easily do so. What I'm intrigued about is that some of these winners are not as well regarded as other ones. And I feel like, unfortunately, due to the way South Pacific was edited, especially at the time, there are people who are low on Sophie. They said,
as Coach, in terms of like the caliber of her win?
Yes, in terms of like put her at the bottom, Coach should have won, etc. Is there something in the psychology of some of these people, like a Sophie or a Ben, or maybe even an Adam, of, you talked about this with Sandra last night, of like, I want to come in and prove something to the people. Do you think Sophie's sort of in that same category of, okay, people don't really regard my win, I want to show them why I won the last time out?
Okay, so you think that's, could, not in terms of how she's viewed, but in terms of how she's viewing herself, could Sophie come out and play a more aggressive game this time because she feels like she might have a chip on her shoulder?
Yeah, and maybe, you know, if this was, you know, 5 years ago, it might be a little bit bigger. Like you said, we are 8 years removed from Sophie winning, so maybe that is the last thing on her mind. Again, since so much has happened, she went to medical school, she became a doctor, she got married, you know, I'm sure she's fine at this point with what Survivor Reddit is saying about her win. I also feel like her win, partially due to podcast appearances, has really been bolstered the more we hear her talk strategy. But you have to wonder with some of these people who are a bit lower on those winner totem poles of like, okay, I'm really going to prove to people, you know, why I won the game the first time. It wasn't for X, Y, Z. I really deserve those $1 million.
I don't think Sophie's too concerned about whether or not she wins the fishy that many weeks when she goes back out there. What I do like about what you're saying is that maybe other people might not be as threatened by her, that if they are not considering her to be one of the big guns that are out there.
I worry about her podcast appearances, though, where she really sort of exemplifies how well-versed she is in strategy.
Well, okay, well, that's it. Okay, so let's just explore that. I mean, how many people of the other 19 do you think that might be well-versed?
Adam Klein.
Adam Klein, maybe Nick.
Anybody who like is already a fan probably already has heard it, and anybody willing to do just a small amount of research on each of the players, that's probably going to be one of the first things that pops up in terms of like seeing a video of them talking about Survivor. That's pretty good information to have. Mm-hmm. And with that amount of people knowing the information, it's probably going to get spread around. Like, actually, she's pretty smart. You got to watch out. So I feel like it could be out there.
Yeah.
This is like layers on layers on layers. Okay, so if so-and-so is perceived this way by so-and-so, and then if they know this, like, I don't have time for the onions, okay, guys? Like, let's just break it back down. Let's be more simple. Because I want to go back to actually a point that Taryn made earlier, which is talking about sort of this Monday morning quarterbacking that Sophie has had the opportunity to demonstrate. Now, whether or not that will actually translate into gameplay, I think that's what, you know, he's nervous about, and I think what I'm nervous about, too, is she's somebody who is so smart, and who I don't know who perceives that she's smart, okay, but I know that she's smart. And so will that then be actually translated into making moves when she needs to, because it's not going to be as straightforward as it was when she played in South Pacific.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I mean, again, I know it's not going to be as straightforward as South Pacific, but she was only left out of one vote in general in South Pacific. And that was more so, that was the Michaela vote. That was more so like a battle of pawns of who was going to go home.
You know what? I honestly think that there was something to that where I think that she knew that was going to be Michaela getting voted out. But there was, because of Redemption Island, I think that they were putting votes that they were like splitting the vote to make Michaela in case she ended up going to Redemption Island. It's complicated.
Why did I need to be reminded of the whole saga with Brandon Hans?
Well, that's the thing as well, is that, again, speaking to Sophie's brilliant observations, she was the one that we heard from the get-go being like, something's a little wrong with Brandon Hans. Now, look, the guy was going swimming with his t-shirt. I mean, it was plain as day. But also, I think the best move by far she made the entire game was at the first final five. Albert's turning on her. He says, Sophie's too dangerous. We got to get rid of her. She hears this, goes to coach and says, you know, we really need to get rid of Ozzy. She prognosticates once again, Sophstradamus, about the fact that if Ozzy gets to the end, he's winning because they've gone to Ozzy's quote unquote pleasure dome at Redemption Island. All the jurors have been there. And so they're going to vote for him in the end. Let's send someone there to beat him. Hey, how about Brandon Hans? It's not just that he's the most likable person left with in front of the jury. He's also the best person that could possibly beat Ozzy. And I think with that move, she single-handedly saved herself and guaranteed her spot there in the end for herself. And that's, I think, a move that some people forget about, especially in the midst of the Brandon Hans narrative. But the fact that she was able to pivot so easily using the information that she already had, I think was a really well-done move that saved her hide right near the end.
Okay. Can we come up with anybody that might be a friend for Sophie that's out there? Because here's what I think. I feel like that Yule that we mentioned, but I do feel like that. So Sophie played in a time where, get this, once upon a time, there was actually three women that won Survivor in a row. It happened in our lifetimes that Sophie won season 23, Kim won season 24, and then Denise won season 25. And I feel like that these three women who all played one time exactly, I feel like that they are all very intelligent women who are very likable and have a lot in common. I feel like that there's going to be a bond there. Again, I mentioned about how the people you get to know the people who played before you and right after you, and I think that those three people are going to have a bond.
I think you also need to look at, you know, who are sort of the carryovers of the people that Sophie worked with or that others work with in their seasons, and do those personality types transplant onto Winners of War? Like, for example, I could see an Albert in Tyson, or maybe even a Tony, right? Of someone who thinks through things so methodically, has that poker background, running odds on odds and odds, and just needs, again, like we talked about with Yule, someone to sort of bounce ideas off with. I could see a Rick in someone like Ben, you know, sort of like just a very good natured, you know, very simple guy who just, mm-hmm. you know, has a goal and sets out to do it. I feel like if Sophie is able to map those personality types of people she was able to, either get along with or at least tolerate onto some of these people, I think that's your best chance.
I like this Sophie Wizard of Oz dream where she ends up like all the farmhands were like the different characters that she met in Oz, and those are the people that she's there with this time.
Yeah, exactly. Now I just imagine this like sepia tone. Well, actually, I feel like they use the sepia tone, right? Sometimes in Survivor, so like it's not too dissimilar. Sophie's going to wake up at the final time. They're going to wake up at the final tribal council, and like all these people are going to be gathered around of, you know, Rick, and she's going to be back in 2011.
You were like, there, and you were there.
Yeah, you had this weird dream where it was 2020, and I was competing with all these other random people.
I'm excited for the ruby red water shoes to come out. I think that's something we could see. I know this is a little bit of a side point, but what I just love so much is this getting to play all these hypotheticals of things that are probably never going to happen. Like, yep. Rob, I love the idea of Kim and Sophie and Denise all working together. I don't really believe that that's going to happen, but man, I want to believe that that's going to happen. Well, so I'm okay with putting it out there.
The three of them are going to start on the same tribe, but I bet at least two out of the three are on one tribe.
Yeah, I mean, Denise was one of the first people I reached to in terms of like who would she get along with. I think she could also get along with like Natalie and Jeremy. I feel like those are personalities that she might be able to blend with. So I think she has some people that she'll be able to talk to and work with no matter where she lands on whichever tribe. It's just a matter of, I think, being able to be safe in early.
If I could push back on that, everybody loves Jeremy. Jeremy can work with anybody, but I do feel like that Natalie, I feel like is a little bit different in terms of that. I feel like that Natalie, I see her that, you know, in her original season, she worked with you know, a lot of the guys that were the people that she ended up having closer connections with, and I just feel like that Natalie seems like she's more like blue collar in terms of like being able to like to talk about things that Sophie would want to talk about. So I actually don't think that that's a connection, Natalie and Sophie.
So, all right. How about Parvati? Yeah, I could see something where like they both kind of like to talk crap about people. You know, yeah. I think that they both obviously have a history in like supporting strong women. They both have a history of sort of like playing down or playing up certain facets of themselves to please egos around them. Like I could see a realm where they get along very well from a personality perspective.
Plus then that fits in with Yule. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a triad we could definitely see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tony.
Yeah.
And Tony.
Always pull in Tony, no matter where you are and who you're talking about.
Yeah. And just to go back to the podcast thing, Sophie did famously talk about how she was a big Tony fan. And Tony, if I know anything, Tony was listening to podcasts about him like a maniac. So hopefully that's lodged somewhere in his mind that Sophie liked him.
Yeah. I mean, even if she just goes up to him, she's like, I was such a huge fan. You'd be like, yeah.
Oh my God. So fierce. I'm so excited to see you. Okay.
Yeah, but he would probably unintentionally mispronounce her name as So Fierce, right?
All right. So Fierce Clerk. I got some working thing going on there.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. We have some questions. All right. Let's fold into our rankings. We talked about Ethan and Danny. All right. Could we give an order? What's the order of finish from worst to first for these four? Mike, do you want to give it a try?
Well, first, let me just say arbitrary and reductive. Just want to get that blanket statement out there. Sure. I'm going to go Yule, Sophie, Danny, Ethan from worst to first.
Yule, Sophie, Danny, Ethan. Okay.
Yeah, I had the same list.
Yeah, I think you could switch Yule and Sophie. I feel like yeah. I could see that.
I think Yule has to be the first one. Like, it really pains me to say it, but when looking at the four of these players, I think Yule's the first one out.
First one out of the game. Wow.
Maybe. Oh, I don't know. Is Adam Klein there? That's the real big question.
We need
to save him or Adam Klein go out before Yule. Either way.
We need a Foo podcast just on these four players.
Yeah. question from Jayton Collins. Of these four people that we talked about, who has the hardest path to the final three? Is it Yule, Liana?
I think it's Yule here. I could see a path, but I think it's the hardest out of all of them.
I would say I think Ethan has a path to the final six, but not the final three. So I think that's also a bit of a contender as well in terms of like a path to the end. I could see a path where Yule gets in with the Good Alliance, gets to the end. I could see less so a path of Ethan being let into the final three in any capacity.
Like two rounds in fire making, it's not that hard.
I was going to say with idols and fire making, I think maybe the odds are a little bit higher.
Idol nullifier when they cash in on their fire token. And they the fire tokens.
That's right. Who knows? And Yule, we know, you know, he's really going to master the fire tokens.
Yeah. Do you think that Yule could gather enough fire tokens to get the God Idol again, Taryn?
Not if Tony has anything to say about it.
Yeah, Tony had the same one.
Okay, I have this mental image of it being sort of like a Dave and Buster's where they're doing like all of those carnival games. Yeah,
I mean, this is crazy. We're talking about Survivor Crypto right now. Like, this is crazy.
Which that Yule invented for Facebook, Mike.
Exactly. He knows how to trade them. I wonder if they can trade them. I would not be surprised if you see some of these people trying to like wheel and deal of like, listen, sort of like the gold bars from Big Brother, right? Like,
yeah.
Okay, I'll give you two fire tokens if you vote out Tyson tonight.
Yeah. Well, and Boston Rob and Sandra are used to the bargaining now from Island of the Idols. Yes, so you better watch out.
What an idiot. You didn't even try to negotiate.
For fire tokens.
These are fake fire tokens. I made these out of driftwood.
Yeah. Okay. Amanda Weaver has a question. Who's Liana's cat voting for? Star
could
of the podcast.
Clam vote for? I think Clam would probably root for, I think Ethan. I think she's lovable. She's sweet. She's an Ethan fan. My other cat is insane, so would probably root for Tony, though. So
okay. We talked about four people today. I asked the panel this last night. Liana, who's the person that you're most excited about that we didn't talk about today?
Oh, the person I'm most excited about that we didn't talk about. I think that has to be Kim Spradlin. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited to see her play, and I'm desperately worried for her. But to see her back on my screen is something I never, ever, ever thought I would see. She's my Yule if I'm Taryn, and she's somebody who I look up to, is really inspirational, and I'm just crazy excited to see her back.
Okay. Taryn, what about you?
The Tyson, no question.
Okay, yeah. That was a surprise. Yeah,
I love Tyson. He's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then Mike, how about you?
Natalie Anderson.
Oh.
I think going back and rewatching some Sam Walter Sur stuff for a project I have coming up, I just forgot how not only good of a player she was, but good of a character she was. There are certainly people that I'm very excited to see back from an entertainment perspective. Tony, Tyson, those are going to be amazing confessionalists, and just goofiness abound. There are players that I'm excited to see back, like Kim. You could also talk about Denise as well. I'm excited for Denise to finally win an immunity challenge. That's what I'm excited about.
Not go to tribal she council. Can't.
For her tribe to finally win an immunity challenge, or it goes the way of Stephanie LaGrosa, where someone says, she's cursed, we have to get rid of her. But Natalie just played such a freaking fun and good game in Survivor San Juan del Sur that I am so excited. On the Tyson note, I'm just really excited for you to talk about Tyson, Rob, because you talk about Sophie. Tyson is the one who you are by far the most connected with, and I would love to hear your perspective in general about, like, genuinely how you feel like Tyson has changed, you know, even since Blood versus Water. Is that mm-hmm. going to affect the way he plays the game, etc.?
Yeah, it's an interesting evolution from, you know, when I first met him, just coming off of only his second time out playing the game in Heroes versus Villains, and his evolution through Blood versus Water, and then coming up through his fourth time out. And that's going to be next time. We're going to get into that on Monday when we'll be talking about Tyson, Denise, Kim, and Parvati. So a jam-packed lineup for the next time out on our third roundtable coming up on Monday. I believe that one is going to be kicking off at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, again, coming up on Monday of this next week, the 13th. So it should be very exciting. I mentioned the evolution of strategy earlier on. If you want even more of a look back at the first 30 seasons of Survivor and their winners, including including my winner rankings, which we did in the Evolution Strategy. Check that out at evolutionofstrategy.com. 300 hours of Survivor Talk await you there if you want to check that out. The first chapter of Borneo is free. Of course, we will not be talking about the winner of that season for Survivor 30 Winners at War. Mike, what else do you have coming up these days?
Well, let's see. Start with the Survivor-based stuff. So next week, a week from tonight, January 15th, is going to mark 4 weeks until Survivor Winners at War, which is crazy. I unfortunately was not out on set for Survivor 40, but that doesn't mean I'm not bringing some preseason coverage. Every weekday starting next Wednesday, I'm going to be giving you a different profile on the winning games of these 20 cast members. So it's going to be just a basic rundown of their winning games, you know, what they did in their first season, their biggest strength, their biggest weakness, some key quotes, big moves that they made. That's going to start. It's going to go in chronological order of win. So we're going to start once again, as we did with this podcast with Ethan Zahn. I'm going to go through everybody. I think it's just a way to just sort of get us all reminded of some of these people's games before we hop into the season proper. You can check that out at parade.com/tag/survivor. Again, that's going to start next Wednesday. Also, I don't know if you guys know this, but February is a big month for Survivor because we also have Australian Survivor All-Stars is coming on February 3rd. And I'm very excited to announce that I'm going to be writing about Australian Survivor All-Stars for the great True Dork Times. I'm going to be doing a weekly article about that. Whoa. I have no idea what I'm going to be writing exactly, but I'm excited about it. I love Australian Survivor, and it's a really interesting cast to start things off. I'm going to be coming out with something in a couple weeks that's going to be like an Australian Survivor 101 for people who saw that trailer and like don't remember the previous seasons or just want to hop in on it or don't know the difference between Australian and American Survivor. It'll sort of be like a go-to guide, and then we'll go from there. And over on the post-show recap side, Jessica mentioned this last night, but her and I are covering Star Trek Picard. I'm also going Down the Hatch, our Lost Rewatch podcast with Josh Wigler, finishing up season one. And of course, it'll only be a few weeks until Liana Boris and myself are back on the RHAP B&B talking about Survivor 40. We'll do a preseason show, I'm sure. But yeah, we're going to be hopping into the Survivor beat very, very soon, and I'm so pumped. I'm so excited for what's to come.
Be a huge season for the B&B. Can't wait to hear the predictions.
Oh, man.
You already got some of them on this podcast, so.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Liana, what are you up to these days?
Taking a break from podcasting.
Yes,
it's my first break,
nice.
I think, since June.
That sounds nice.
It's been really nice. Yeah. But you know, already starting to get back into the swing of things. Actually, speaking of Australian Survivor, I'm going to be with Shannon Gates when we do our premiere to do a preseason look at what we're going to expect this season. So I'll be on with her doing that at some point in the future. And then thinking ahead to the Masked Singer, which will be back after the Super Bowl. And so Puya and I are going to be doing coverage of that over on the Masked Singer wrap ups.
Okay. All right. And Taryn, how about you?
Well, if you need something to hold you over until Survivor starts, or at least in the meantime of now and next week, there's a great new show on Netflix that we were talking about. It's got some great characters on it that are very enthusiastic about life.
Joey?
Check out The Circle. It's on Netflix. It's an interesting show where players are not allowed to interact in person. They're all in separate rooms in an apartment building. They can only interact via a social media platform known as The Circle. And they like to catfish each other. It is a competition reality show. They rate each other, and the most popular people then get to decide who to block and eliminate from the show. It's a lot of fun. I highly recommend it. It's on Netflix. Rob and I have been doing some podcasts on it. I just recorded three earlier today. We're going to do another one tomorrow night on the second batch of episodes that have been released today. So check that out. Of course, I've got some Big Brother stuff, some end of the year Big Brother coverage heading your way sometime in the next couple of weeks. Just keep an eye out for that. And then, you know, eventually Big Brother Canada is going to come around. And then if you want to hear me talk about Survivor, I've got something cooking up for that as well for this season. So keep an eye out for that as well.
Okay. Taryn, could you imagine, could they throw Joey out into the cast of Survivor Winners at War to start interacting with these people?
Spradlin, oh my God.
What would he say? Like, I won season 14 and a half of Survivor. You don't know who I am.
Message Tony, I like the cut of your jib. You look like a guy I could really get down with.
Oh, Wendell, I could kiss your stupid face, you builder.
Hey, Amber, how happy are you in your marriage? Hey. You how you feeling?
Message. Hey, back off, brother.
I don't like this guy, Rob.
Knife emoji. Send. Yeah.
Emoji. Knife emoji, blood emoji, eggplant emoji, send.
Hey, what's this purple guy? Okay, all right. Let's
why is he sending these grimace?
Let's end it there. Okay. Great job. This was so much fun tonight to get to talk through this. Really fun to get to talk through these four players. Again, Survivor Winners at War coming on February 12th, 2020. Also, coincidentally, the 10-year anniversary of Rob Has a Podcast. We have a big function that we're working on for the premiere on February 12th here in Los Angeles. So very excited for that. So thank you for tuning in. We'll be back with our Circle Roundtable tomorrow night. Our Winners Season 40 Roundtable number 3 coming up on Monday. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.